winner of RuPaul's Drag Race, America's next drag superstar is Sasha Velour.
Sasha Velour, the stage name of Sasha Steinberg, won season 9 of RuPaul's Drag Race, the VH1 reality TV show. You might remember Velour's gleaming bald head, her dramatic eyebrows that she says were inspired by Frida Kahlo. But what's probably most unique about Sasha is her very intellectual approach to drag. The Atlantic calls her a cerebral Brooklyn artist. Sasha Velour joins us now from Durham, North Carolina, where she's on what's called the War on the Catwalk Tour with other contestants from RuPaul's Drag Race. Sasha Velour, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you so much for having me.
And one of the things that people, even people who don't watch RuPaul's Drag Race, if they've seen you on it, they see that there is something very different about you than most drag queens out there. What is that? What is it that you bring that sets you apart?
Well, I think some people might describe it as being terribly serious. The truth is I do take drag really seriously, and I think that there's kind of a place for that, to see it as this political and historical art form and to want to continue pushing it in new directions and also honor the old directions as well. So I'm sort of like a drag intellectual / drag queen.
Well, you say you're drag intellectual. You were a Fulbright scholar. You have a master's degree. Tell us a little bit about your educational background.
Yeah, so I went to Vassar College for undergraduate and studied literature and queer theory and all of the above. And then I kind of, I took a Fulbright scholarship in Russia. And that's really where my direction shifted a little bit, because I became really interested in what kind of work actually helps to change things for queer people. And I became really fascinated with drag because it's such an accessible and joyful art form. And I wanted to create beautiful images in drag that would not just inspire queer people who need to see some beauty and need to experience some joy, but also would engage people politically, get political discussions started in gay bars, in the queer community, and really inspire people to action as well as to wearing a few more sequins and a little bit more glitter.
Political discussions like what?
We need to talk about representation for queer people in the media and also in law. And there's a long history of drag queens leading those discussions in marches on the street and even in bars, going back to the time of Stonewall and before. Gay bars have always been spaces of getting angry about politics and about legal situations, and we need that now more than ever.
Do you think that drag queens have a role to play right now in the debate over transgender rights?
Absolutely, because drag is so much more than gay men dressing up as women. It's about creating space and creating validity for people who want to express gender differently and by their own rules. And drag queens, drag kings need to be at the forefront of pushing for rights and protections and safe spaces for the entire spectrum of gender nonconforming and trans people.
Now, another thing that sets you apart is that you tend not to wear a wig. You have a shaved head, which has its own story. So tell us about that.
Yeah, well, When I was starting to experiment with drag, my mom was diagnosed with cancer, and during her chemo treatment, she lost all of her hair. And for her, the idea of being a femme with no hair was really difficult. But I really actually appreciated that she didn't wear wigs at the time, that she didn't wear hats or scarves. She just let her beautiful bald head air out, and she found ways to make it beautiful with earrings and with fashion, and I love that so much. I wanted to pay tribute to that with my own drag.
Are there other bald queens?
Oh, there's such a long history of bald queens. I think about New York legends like Kevin Aviance, who've tied in baldness with a kind of androgynous drag or a non-binary drag, and I love that too, because to me, pushing against a very strict idea of femininity is something that I love about drag, and that I think we need to see even more of.
One of the most famous moments from this season of the show is you taking off a wig and rose petals coming out from underneath it. How did you get that idea? Tell us a little bit about that.
I'm sort of fascinated. When I was a little kid, I wanted to be a magician. And I sort of see that drag is a bit of a magic trick at times, too. And that's partly what keeps people so captivated. So I thought a lip sync performance was a great time to do a little magic trick. And so I stuffed my wig and my gloves full of rose petals and revealed them at different moments during Whitney Houston's So Emotional. Because what's more emotional, what's more extra than just like a bath of rose petals?
There was one moment on the show last season I want to ask you about. One of the drag queens, Eureka O'Hara, made a joke about eating disorders in one episode. She later apologized, and you had this to say.
It's a sensitive issue for me because I was severely anorexic for my entire early 20s. I was so, like, unhealthy looking. People would, like, call me E.T. and stuff because the way that I looked on the street. It was like, I have a lot of hurt from it still.
After that moment, two of the other drag queens opened up about their own eating disorders. Is this a big problem in the drag community?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's even more than that. Even this season, who've experienced trying to deal with body image and eating disorders. So I'm glad that we had that discussion. I'm definitely not as much of a, like, destroyer of humor as maybe I came across in that moment. But I think it's important to talk about the things, to talk about things as well as joking about them.
How did your parents react to you going down this path?
At first, they were a little confused. They didn't really know that much about drag. Maybe they had some misunderstandings about what it was or what that lifestyle was like. But they've really, my dad especially, has really come around since he's had a chance to see me on the show.
I read that he drove up to a gay bar in Chicago to watch you on the show.
Yeah, he hosted some viewing parties in our hometown of Urbana, Illinois, for all of his professor friends. They would watch together. And then he was actually in San Francisco when the final episode aired. And it was caught on video of him watching me win the crown, which was amazing. It was so moving.
Well, you mentioned our hometown of Urbana, Illinois. You and I actually went to the same high school, although not at the same time. Not at the same time.
Exactly. Legends of you were still being discussed when I was there.
Well, did that have anything to do with how you got interested in this, or?
Totally. Yeah, we went to this experimental high school that really pushed people to think independently and to take everything a little too seriously. And I think I've always carried that attitude and that culture with me wherever I go.
Do you think it's difficult for kids who want to get into drag to do so still?
No. It's the simplest thing. You just go and you find whatever you can find. If it's like a simple pair of heels, or if you have to strap some like cans of food to the back of your shoes so that you have that little lift. If you want to go and get some mascara, if you have to use a little Sharpie on your eye, like, you can make drag out of absolutely anything. And if that is what inspires you, I say everyone should go out and do it.
So what are you going to do next? I know that you operate a magazine about drag.
Yeah, I'm the artistic director of an art magazine about drag. And it's photos and interviews and illustrations, all that try to capture this wonderful history and wonderful culture of drag. And I also have been producing a monthly show in New York where we offer the magazine as well as fabulous drag performances from queens all over the country.
How did you end up on RuPaul's Drag Race?
I had auditioned for a couple years. I auditioned for one season before, for season 8, and I didn't make the cut. I didn't get any phone calls. They totally weren't interested. And then I'm someone who, like, I try to change as fast as I can, just as many new things as I can explore. So then by the next year, my drag had completely shifted in new directions. And then I got the call. I actually got the call while I was visiting my dad in Russia, in the airport. And I hurried back to New York with only like 14 days to prepare to go film. It was a really wild experience. And that was about a year ago.
Now, I've seen a sped up video of you getting ready, preparing, turning into Sasha Velour. It's an unbelievable amount of stuff that you have to do in order to get there. How often are you switching back and forth between yourself and Sasha Velour?
These days, I become Sasha Velour every night, pretty much.
You have to do that every single night? You don't ever just leave it on?
No, I have to reshave my entire head and face and chest and arms. And then I cover all of it with makeup and contour everything, even up to the back of my head. And then slather it with beautiful eye makeup and lipstick and lashes until it's done.
You never just leave it on for a night?
Nope. Mm-mm. I would hate to think what the pillow would look like if I even tried.
That's Sasha Velour, the season 9 winner of RuPaul's Drag Race. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And you can watch that video of Sasha Steinberg becoming Sasha Velour at hereandnow.org.